Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine abyss, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Arr, children and people of the world of the afterlife. Arr, how are you doing? Have you had a good time? Have you had a bad time? Have you had a COVID time? Don't have a COVID time, because if you can avoid that, that's probably a good idea. Because it's not necessarily from what a positive experience, from what I've heard from all the mythical people out there in the world. There are billions of people on this planet. Do you know that? Billions. Billions of people on this planet. Hello, people in the world of afterlife. Tonight, we have a couple of fun people. One by the name of Larry Atchley Jr., and one by the name of Ethan Nate. Hello, gentlemen. How's it going?
Good, good.
Going well, going well. Thanks for having us on the show.
Did we lose Larry?
No, he was there. I heard him.
Can you hear me?
Now we hear you.
Okay. Hopefully I'm not having microphone problems.
Well, that's not the end of the world. The end of the world is going to happen probably in about 3 hours.
Wow. Clock was wrong. I had it set for 2:27.
Nah, 3 hours. I've got it programmed in on my thing. By the way, Jack says hi in the chat room.
Oh.
Larry, you know Jack.
I know Jack.
Exactly.
I haven't talked to Jack in quite a while.
Yeah, Jack comes to the show all the time, or as many times as he can.
Yeah, I need to start tuning in more often. It's been a long time.
Well, the great thing is I have a new website that I just shinily polished up there a couple of months ago, and afterrot.com, and you can hear any old show that I've gotten put up there, which I'm slowly trying to add all the old rest of them up.
Cool, cool. That's awesome.
So you gentlemen have a book in the process, if I'm not mistaken and corrected, something to the tune of Island Terrors and Sea Horrors. Yes?
That is correct. It's actually, ebook-wise, it's beyond the process. It's actually available now. It's just now going live, though, in print version. And it's something that I've been working on for quite a few months now, to the point where I'm tired of seeing it.
So there's a reason why I started off with my pirate voice, because I know Larry likes pirates.
Oh, I love pirates, too. That's actually, I think that's how Larry and I may have possibly met about 15 years ago, was our love of pirates and being on a panel or something together.
Right. Yeah, we met at a sci-fi fantasy fan convention several years ago. Yeah, it's probably been almost 15 years. And we both love stuff to do with pirates and, writing books and
rum,
hanging out.
Rum?
Yeah, that too.
Why is the rum all gone?
I've got a couple of bottles, so mine's not gone yet.
Do you have Kraken rum?
I do.
I love that bottle. That bottle is freaking out. I'm not a rum fan, but I love the bottle.
It has some kick to it. Actually, when I first got a bottle of Kraken, I was at a convention that Larry was probably at, and I was one of the publishers that I worked with is Yard Dog Press down here in Arkansas, and we were doing our road show, which is a kind of a variety comedy thing where it's everything from interpretive reading, where an author reads their works while other authors act out what's going on, which can be quite comical, to some comedy routines. And to start mine off with, I made everybody take a shot of Kraken rum, and we passed it around the room, and that's how my set began, because I'm a lot funnier when you're drunker.
I've observed that. Not of yours, but of others.
Right, right. That's just kind of a general given, I think, with anyone, right?
Yeah, but that Kraken has some kick to it.
Yeah,
I kick people all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
At a Yard Dog Press panel, and it is hilarious to watch them enact out the stories.
It is not for minors.
But no, it's definitely NC-17.
Let's not worry about the minors. They're not going to be listening to this show anyways.
Right, right. Just only major leagues on this show.
That's good, because the book's not necessarily for minors. Not that there's anything totally bad with it, but there are a couple of stories that, you know, might have a curse word or two that some parents may not approve of. But
curses!
Yeah, I don't write my material, and I do not present work that is meant to be necessarily PC friendly, because you're never going to be able to satisfy everybody, and I don't try. I write what Absolutely. I want to write, and I publish what I want to publish, and if somebody doesn't like it, they got other options.
Right.
That's why this whole wide world has variety.
Exactly. And I'm not a fan of censorship myself, so I think it's important that we continue to have freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom to write what we want to write,
and Larry?
Opinions we want to express.
Larry?
Mm-hmm.
Beep.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. You said the bit about censorship, so I was going to censorship you.
No.
Sorry, I can't help it. I operate on two levels. One is very hyper, and one is moderately hyper.
I actually was having a tweet back and forth with Dee Snider of Twisted Sister today, because people were talking about some censorship stuff and saying how it's all about Black and Latino music. And Dee said something about it, and I commented on top of it about the PMRC, because years ago, my term paper as a junior was about the PMRC, because it was a hot topic at that time. And, you know, people like Dee Snider and Frank Zappa went to bat for, you know, people's rights and no censorship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember watching some footage of those hearings in some different documentaries, and it was pretty interesting. Because
the one with Dee Snider at the courthouse in Yappin? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Dee actually liked my comment today about that. And, you know, that was kind of cool of him. But I've always felt the same way, even whenever I have people come to my table. And Larry and I have shared tables before at events. But when people come to my table, I tell them if they've got a – kids tend to be very enthused about my book covers. And, and they'll see it. And I look at their parents and say, that is not kid-friendly. And some of the parents like, oh, well, thanks for letting me know. And other parents are like, going, well, I'll let them read whatever. So that's fine. You can let them read it. I said, I just want to let you know in advance. So if you do decide to purchase it, you don't, you know, get home and the kids say, Mom, what does this mean? You know, I just want to give you a heads up.
Exactly.
But it's not up to, in my opinion, the government or some other organization to tell anyone what they should or shouldn't allow someone else to read. You know, that's up to, you know, a child's parent, for instance, you know, teaching them what they believe is right and wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I certainly there's certain things young children shouldn't read or shouldn't watch or see. I'm all for, you know, people being aware of, hey, this is mature content. No, I definitely don't have a problem with labeling something to that effect. But yeah definitely
some
wouldn't
of the
want
material
it to be.
In this book. You know, some of these authors, like Edgar Allan Poe and stuff, in his day, there was a lot of this material that they're like going, you know what, that's taboo.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know,
yes, like Dagon.
The cutting edge
exactly.
of writing things that would definitely potentially upset or offend people of that era. And he didn't have a problem with it.
Well, and you mentioned
as long
Dagon.
As he can make money at it.
You mentioned Dagon, and that's one of those things now people are like, well, how dare you put, you know, I haven't had anybody say it yet, but I'm, you know, I expect to hear somebody say, well, how dare you put a Lovecraft story in there? He was, you know, a fascist and he was this and that. And I was like, you know what? I enjoy his writing and his personal beliefs has nothing to do with this. This is a good story or a good poem, and that's all there is to it. And once again, if you don't like it, there's 359 other degrees you can turn.
It's separating the art from the artist. I mean, yes, some artistic people have slightly different views on the world and how to get to some of those things, but their art doesn't necessarily take anything away from them being whatever. I mean, obviously, there are some instances in the world where it's like, oh, hey, look at that politician person there. He's an idiot, but he hasn't done anything positive. So you can say that. But the other person over here who actually changed the shape of the world to for better, say like Gandhi and a few others, Mother Teresa, they had their own skeletons as well, but you don't hear anybody talking about them, but they did have them.
Yeah, and you know, if people were to say, well, you know, in today's world, well, drinking is bad. Well, if you got rid of all of the books and all of the music and all of the art that was created by somebody who was, you know, an alcoholic, there
inebriated.
Would be very, very little, very, very little for us to enjoy. When it came to, you know, relaxation and entertainment for books or music or art.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
And then we wouldn't have hell. And that's where I've met Larry before, actually only virtually, because we're in a couple of books together as well.
Oh, yeah. I've read some of those.
Perfect. Yeah, we had a lot of fun writing stories for those Heroes in Hell anthologies, didn't we, Bill?
Absolutely. And they're still going. There are still more more books being written, more short stories being written. Yeah. I think there is the 19th anthology is still coming out. No, sorry.
Yeah.
23rd?
Yeah, I've lost track of the numbers, but yeah, there've been a few. I haven't been in the last couple, but I'm going to try to take a stab at getting a story in the next one, which I believe is going to be titled Liars in Hell.
I'm not 100% certain.
But maybe the order that they're doing it in. So
there might be a couple of different things going on there. I think one was something, and I can't remember any. I've also been in the same boat where I haven't been able to put anything out together. But not only in the Hell books, we're also in What Scares the Boogeyman and The Book of Night.
That's right, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, because we like the horror stuff.
Well, and I
believe the poetry stuff.
And the poetry stuff. Yep.
Besides this book, Larry and I, we're also, aren't we in one of John's books together?
Did you ever put anything? Oh, yes. Terror by Gaslight. Did you have a story in that? Anything?
Yes, I have one called From the Corner of the Eye.
Okay.
And I remember you and I actually met was maybe at John's table, John Manning.
You know, John, I think, is who introduced us. Actually, yes. That's true. Yeah,
isn't John, that cool? Small world and all that crap.
Good friend of ours, and unfortunately passed away in 2015. Definitely his work and his writing lives on, and he was a great guy and a great writer and a great great editor too. You know, he put some anthologies and some things together before he passed that, you know, I had a chance to have some stories in. Like Ethan mentioned, we both had stories in Terror by Gaslight. He put together What Scares the Boogeyman, which was another horror-based anthology as well. So, those are some cool books. Those all should still be available, I think.
Maybe they are still on the Amazons.
Yeah, I think they're still out there. So even
I actually
though...
saw a copy of Terror by Gaslight about 2 years ago at a convention. Somebody came to my table and put it in front of me and asked me to sign it. I'm like, what's this? Because I'd never seen a copy physically because John passed away before the physical copies come out, if I recall properly. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen a copy. And I'm like, oh, wow, cool. They're like, what? You know what this book is? I'm not going, well, I know what it is. I just have never, you know, seen one up close right. In person. It was a bit of
what
a
you mean you didn't order your own copy?
No, at that time actually there was that book had a lot of issues with coming out with him being ill at the time and then passing away and things
it
got all
happened.
So it was confusing, but as somebody who has put out some of their own books like this anthology Island Terrors and Sea Horrors, oh my gosh, it's a lot more work than people would ever imagine, at least if you're going to try to do it properly.
Well, right. And on top of that, so I skimmed through most of the book before the show.
It's a lot of book, isn't it?
It's a couple of hundred pages.
In print, now, it actually comes out to over 300.
On the ebook that you sent me, it's 303 with the final page being one goofy ass line that says, hey, this is the title of the book.
And then on the ebook versions, like for Kindle, it's like 600 pages.
it's
well,
lot.
You know, sizing.
Which is how I've been reading it.
Yeah, but it is a lot. But I was trying to include a lot of the authors that I have been influenced by that wrote material that was related to this, you know, subject matter. There were other authors that I really loved that aren't in this book, but they didn't have anything that would have been public domain or really fit the subject matter. Like Robert E. Howard's one of my favorites, and I've taken Larry off to Robert E. Howard days, but the closest he
Robert E. Howard is awesome.
Yeah. You know, he had his Pirate Queen Belit, but that doesn't really fit into the horror genre, and I wouldn't have been able to obtain the rights on that probably more likely
correct.
Anyway.
Marvel owns all the rights to those right now.
Do they really?
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know if they own it, but they're licensing a lot of it. So there's actually a couple of good comic book series doing adaptations of various Conan and Conan subset stuff. There was a 5-issue miniseries for Billet.
I have that. Yeah, I have that. In fact, I got I bought the anthology version that has them all together in a one big graphic novel.
Yeah.
Those are good. Those are really good. And they also did some other stuff. I think it was Age of Conan.
Yeah, Age of Conan was a series.
13-episode series. And a good friend of mine, Scott Oden, actually has a he published a novella in parts through it at the back of each of the episodes of that comic book.
Nice.
When they released it a couple of years ago. And I have all of those.
I think I have the first issue of that. By the way, just so you guys know, I also own a comic book shop, so I know lots about comics.
Oh, I was assistant manager at a comic book shop down in Dallas for five years or so.
That's right.
My entire experience with Dallas is being there for about a half an hour as a plane transferred as I was going to El Paso in summertime.
Yeah.
It would take you that long to get from your gate to the next gate, I'm sure.
Yeah. It was like walk into a pea soup. I was like, what the hell is this? It's so bloody hot. Thank God I'm back into air conditioning.
And then you went to El Paso.
And then I went to El Paso for 2 weeks to work from 10 at night until like 6 in the morning. It's like, thank God, because that's when it was cooler.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, cooler being the word. Not
relative.
Cool, but cooler.
Yeah, and this was in a warehouse, so they had these big swamp fans or whatever going on. So it's like there's a lot of airflow, so thankfully it was nice and cool. But I would not want to have been working in that place when the sun beaten down on the roof.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in the Dallas area for several years and worked at Titan Comics, a good friend of mine that I used to game with. I worked with him for a while until I got something back in my field of television and film. And while I was working for him, actually, is when I finally got back into writing fiction again, because I'd taken a long, long break from writing fiction. And when they did that Van Helsing movie that came out like 2004, something like that, Universal had a competition, and you had to write a story that included Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, and the Wolfman. And I wrote a story, and it got first place. It didn't get grand prize, but it got first place. And the rights came back to me. I put that in my first collection called Of Monsters and Madmen, which is a collection of stories of previously published work. Along with a couple of new stories, and then I had various artists do art for every single story in there, including three of the interior pieces of art in that book. The artist who did that, David J. Martinez, is the artist who did the cover for Island Terrors.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. It's a very cool cover, and it's neat how everything came together with that book too, and it has a lot of great illustrations inside the book as well.
That took some work too.
some photography too, which you may
formatting
talk a little bit about there, Ethan.
Well, the one photograph at the end is actually a shot I took from the Arkansas side shooting in Oklahoma over the Arkansas River, but the other pieces of art in there, like by Gustave Doré, who's one of my favorites, represent like Rime of the Ancient Mariner and stuff. Definitely had to have that. But I do want to say that the book, the guy is dedicated to Ian Keach. He's got three pieces of photography in there, and they are put in there posthumously, courtesy of his family. He was a good buddy of mine out of Wales that passed away from heart failure this year. But he and I had a lot of the same things in common as far as some of the literature and some of our love for progressive rock music, things like Hawkwind and stuff like that.
So you guys know who Yes is?
Oh, yeah. So that's who the book is actually dedicated to, is my good friend who passed away just about 3 days before my birthday this year.
Damn, he's younger than I was. I am.
Ian, yeah, he was only 53, I think, when he passed.
54, according to the memoriam.
54, somewhere near.
Yep, that's okay. I multitask like a muffin fluffer, so it's like I've got like 14 windows of stuff open. And I do have to say that one piece of the artwork that you've got in the book is from one of my favorite artists, Gustav Dore.
Oh, well,
I love his artwork.
There's actually more than one in there of him.
Oh, I just saw the one thing saying him.
No, he's got the albatross in there, and I had done a hellish thing.
Oh,
both
the albatross and
the Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Yeah. He actually,
see, that's what happens when you read fast.
And then also in the Destruction of the Leviathan poem, he used some of his artwork for that, even though it's not meant for that piece. As far as he wasn't commissioned to do it for a particular poem. And then one of my stories that's in there, called Dangerous Pearl, originally appeared in the Skello Press General. And when Skello's Press put that out, they actually had a piece of his artwork with my story. And I had considered using it again for the same story, and I decided not to. I decided to use a different piece. But, yeah, how he did his work, the wood cuttings, and the detail that goes into Gustav's work is just amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff.
Always loved his work. I was originally introduced to it when I read The Divine Comedy when I was 15.
Yep.
For fun. I wasn't even reading it for school.
Yeah, I have a copy of the illustrated Divine Comedy with all of the Dore woodcuts in there. It's pretty awesome.
I have a couple of his illustrated ones for Edgar Allan Poe, The Raven, and I've also got Paradise Lost that he did. I've been a fan of his for many, many years.
As everybody should be.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's one of the reasons I put it in there is because there's a lot of people, unless, you know, you happen to be an art student, there's a lot of people nowadays that probably have never heard of him or seen his work. And that was part of the point of this book. First of all, I've always loved books that had illustrations in them. You know, even if it goes back to the days of the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, and you've seen the little pencil drawings in those that went with some of the chapters.
Right.
But I wanted to include writers that some of today's, you know, readers may not be familiar with. And I wanted to include some art that, you know, that might have been from the same era, but also just to give people a sampling instead of using new artists. I wanted to give people a sampling of, you know, some of the great masters.
Absolutely. And it's, for me, really, it's an honor to be included in a collection like this. And I appreciate the opportunity that Ethan gave me when he asked me earlier this year if I did want to contribute anything to the books. And I unfortunately didn't have any seafaring or pirate horror stories that I don't retain the rights to right now, because the only pirate story I really have finished and have published is the rights are retained by Persid Publishing in the Pirates in Hell anthology. So I couldn't reuse that one. I didn't really have time to put together a short story, but I did have some poems that I sent to Ethan for him to consider, and was able to get three poems published in this anthology, which is one of mine is Drag Me Down to the Depths of the Sea.
I read that one.
Pirate, yeah. And a Pirate Adrift, and Doom of Destiny. So three poems that I've really enjoyed reciting over the years at different events with a group called the Sea Dog Slam, who I do pirate poetry performances with at a lot of different like pirate festivals and even like Renaissance or medieval festivals.
Well, even at some of the same conventions you and I go to, because y'all invited me to come to one of those one time, and I had a panel that I was on that same time, so I couldn't make it. But
yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, I mean, it's really cool to be able to be in this collection with all these other writers, and certainly with Ethan as well, because Ethan's an awesome writer too. I mean, I've always enjoyed your stories and your poetry, and I've even read some of your poems at some of these events where I've read my poems. So. Because you had shared a couple of your poems that are in this book with me a few years ago.
Yeah, Torture of a Pirate was one that's been published before, and I had passed that one on to you, I know, as well as maybe another one, and you said you read it.
Yeah, Jolly Rouge, and Torture of a Pirate and The Pirate Queen, I think is the other one that I've read at some of the events.
Yeah.
And those are all in here. Well, so yeah, it's good stuff.
One of the more interesting things I read when I was breezing through the book here was the introduction. Like about a 5 or 6 page history exposition on pirates and seagoing cultures from around the world. And I love the fact that the Canadian Inuit was mentioned. That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, between what, how they had to, you know, use the sea to survive, and, you know, I can't imagine trying to tackle a whale in a, you know, an outrigger canoe or something of that nature.
In the freezing cold.
Exactly. Right. But also, you know, when you think about their history with, you know, the Vikings and stuff, and
yeah,
and even though they weren't necessarily battling on the water with that, I mean, you still had terror coming from the sea, and then they kicked their butt and sent them home.
Yeah. And that's why the Norse weren't able to establish a lasting settlement in North America, and why Christopher Columbus wrongly got the claim for discovering the New West World. So
it still wasn't America.
500 years too late after Leif Erikson and the Norsemen.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say something funny because it was the Viking show is on. And it's like, what? No.
But I love Vikings, though, too. That's, I mean, there's one of my stories in there that actually takes an old Viking myth where Thor and Loki are battling the giants. And I do it from a different point of view, from fishermen out on the waters, and how their day is going really, really wrong whenever the waters are getting sucked down and the tides are being invented and so forth. And the goddess Hel, or Ran, excuse me, instead of Hel, confronts them as a mermaid and then sucks them down to her abode for all time, or at least until she gets tired of you, and then spits you back out.
Yeah, it's a cool, good story. It's called Ran Like Hel. So if anybody picks up the book, and which right now it is available for ebook for only $3.99, it's a great value considering how many stories are in here. But that's one of my favorite stories so far that I've read throughout the book.
And Ran Like Hel, that was a offshoot of Pink Floyd's Run Like Hel. So
yeah,
I kind of got that off the beginning. Yes,
I picked up on that. And funnily enough, Ethan, because you and I are very musically inclined, one of my stories in my story in Terror by Gaslight is called A Light in the Black, which is a reference to Iron Maiden's Fear of the Dark. Because one of the lines at the beginning, that when Bruce Dickinson introduces a song, is he said, "A light in the black, or just a fear of the dark."
Yep.
So you and I have, you know, a similar leaning in those directions.
I went looking for their new album today, and it's not available in the small town I'm in, so I'm gonna have to go look online.
Oh, the new live
yes.
version from the Book of Souls, or I'm sorry, from the Legacy of the Beast tour.
Yep, and they do get a mention in that intro that...
I was just about to say, the Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yep, they, and that's a fun song to watch them perform live. But, you know, I was one of those kids that I loved history, and even though I did read a lot of historical stuff myself, it was very easy to learn history through the works of Iron Maiden.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. History and literature, and also a lot of famous classic movies that they reference in their songs, too. So,
yeah,
you can learn a lot by listening to heavy metal, believe it or not, get out there, people.
Fun thing, a lot of classic heavy metal musicians are actually classically music trained on violins or cellos or whatever before they got into the heavy-duty electric guitar. Which
That's
means
true.
They know how to play that shit.
Oh, even artist and writer David Lee Anderson.
Yep.
He's got a band, and one year he asked me to sit in and play original music that was all based around space stuff, like songs about Mork from Ork and stuff, because his guitarist couldn't make it to the convention that weekend because his guitarist was like first chair violin for the Oklahoma Symphony.
There you go.
So I'm like, okay, well, send me the MP3s. And, you know, and so I learned like an hour and a half worth of music that way in a couple of weeks and performed on stage for the first time live in like 20 years.
Always a pan load of fun.
Yeah, that was at FinCon 1 year. So yeah. A little bit nerve wracking because I haven't been on stage in so long, but I'm used to being up in front of people reading and talking about my stuff. I think Larry actually has been entertained before at some of my readings, watching the reactions to the people who are not familiar with my work looking at the shock on their face.
Yeah. Definitely shock and awe.
Shock is good for people. Cleanses the system of some silliness.
Right.
You know, every once in a while I can see it on their face, like, I can't believe he said that or he touched that subject matter. But I have the opinion, if it's okay for Stephen King to touch a certain subject matter, it's okay for me.
Right.
Not that my writing is as good as his, but
I say everything's fair as long as you're not doing anything illegal.
Right.
I will point out also, theme-wise on here, when Larry was talking about, like, Drag Me Under, if you'll notice where it falls in the book, it's, like, there down in the maelstrom with Edgar Allan Poe. I tried to put poems in between each of the stories to give it a little bit of a kind of a chapter break. But whenever you read like Drag Me Down to the Depths of the Sea, and it's followed by, you know, Ran Like Hell, where they get dragged down into the sea. I worked really hard in trying to match some of these things up. So it's not just haphazard, the layout and the order of the 36 stories and poems in this book.
Right. So you tried to put a flow to go.
I tried. It didn't always work.
No, and I think it works well because I picked up on that as well when I was reading it, because it starts with Into the Maelstrom by Poe, and then my poem, Drag Me Down Into the Depths of the Sea, and then Ran Like Hell. So you got that theme going, and like you said, you did try to pair things together and put things to create some cohesiveness, and I think it works. It worked pretty well, and there's some great authors in here. Other than just myself and, of course, Ethan, you know, but some of the classic authors in here that we featured, you know, Edgar Allan Poe, Samuel Taylor
Coleridge.
Some
dude named Shakespeare.
I saw the Shakespeare one.
Yeah. There's.
I actually recognize all the names.
Yeah, that was an excerpt from The Tempest, I believe, right?
Yeah. Did you recognize Anonymous? He's been in a lot of things.
He's one of my favorite dudes. I was talking to him about 3 days ago, and he said some shit about shit, and I said, I don't really know about the shit.
You know, actually, one of that I've talked to Larry about that's one of my favorites is from a fragment on a piece of papyrus that from a mummy wrapping. And I don't know, I may be like butchering the guy's name, but Archilochus, the guy lived like 680 BC, but it's just a
ooh, I saw that name.
It was a portion of a poem, and it's one of those things. It's like he was definitely in a bad mood about whoever he wrote this about. I mean, he was, you know, loathing this guy and just getting his poison pen out for whoever it was that had wronged him. But it's a very short poem, but it was one that it's like, you know, I really need an image for that one, and I never did manage to find one that I thought was appropriate. But yeah, that's the thing. This book doesn't just go back, you know, to the 18th and 19th century. I mean, this book goes back before, you know, Christ, and it touches on a variety of subject matters, not only on the ocean, but on those lonely little islands. And it even deals with, you know, a couple different type of religious beliefs and stuff like that in there. So the only thing I didn't really get in there that I wish I had was I wish I'd have gotten maybe an Asian story or two in there, especially considering that, you know, the world's largest pirate captain or whatever, I don't know what term I should use for it, but what was it? She had something like 10,000 pirates under her command.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yes, I can't remember her name.
Yes. I can't either at the moment, but I mean, you know, I'm sure there were some stories that I overlooked out of that part of the world, or or I couldn't use them because they weren't public domain, that I wish had I was able to at least to include one or two. And then I managed to get a sea shanty in there.
Okay. I was going to say there's probably some bits and pieces from Sun Tzu's Art of War that would have been applicable, because I'm sure there was at least a chapter or a section about naval warfare.
Yeah.
I recall that. Yeah.
But to put it in as fiction, it's like, eh, okay. And the book was getting so thick as it was. I mean, it was getting huge.
But again, Sun Tzu is basically a work of fiction anyways, because he's really a combination of several people all wrapped up into one.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
So the female pirate queen, the Asian female pirate queen, it was, I'm probably going to butcher this, but it's Ching Shih.
She?
Ching Shih.
Yeah. I think Shih is she. Or she. She.
Ching Shih.
She had like 10,000 pirates and was finally pardoned.
Yeah, said she commanded over 1,800 junks, which are traditional Chinese sailing ships, manned by 60,000 to 80,000 pirates.
Okay, so definitely over 10,000.
A lot. Yeah.
She had a few
That's
people
like the
with her.
Population of a town. I mean, come on. That's
unlike most pirates, she did not suffer a violent death at sea or by being, hung at the guillotine. She was pardoned, which is kind of unusual for pirates. I mean, we see these movies like Pirates of the Caribbean or, even the old Errol Flynn films and stuff like that, and it's very romanticized. But, I mean, that was a rough, scary life for a lot of people who, for the most part, couldn't even swim.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt at all. And it was definitely a very perilous way to make a living. And for all the pirates that we hear that were successful and made a lot of money, you had, thousands of others that died horrible, brutal deaths, penniless. So it was not.
Well, and on top of that, it was even still better for them as a pirate, because if they were part of the Navy, a lot of times their conditions were even worse because they were treated.
Well, that's true. Yeah, and that's why a lot of people went to piracy, because conditions in the Navy were so brutal. So, if you wanted to try to make your fortune, going rogue or going pirate was certainly a way to do it, but it was certainly risky, a risky venture. But there were a lot that were successful at it.
Yeah, but when you look at it, if you're out there that long without fresh water and without decent
fresh food.
And stuff, now that we know what that does to the human mind, it's easy to see that you're out there in the middle of nowhere, you have no idea, where the map ends or if you're going to go over the side, and you're not properly, nourished. It's easy to see how they came up with some of these creatures and these myths of things that, would attack or, sneak up out of the waves on them.
No, so, come on. Those were all real.
With science, once again, we have discovered, like giant squid and the vampire squid and, thanks to Peter Benchley, we've got Jaws and
and the Megalodon.
Oh, there is that.
Right. Yeah, there is some big stuff out there. There may still be some big stuff out there. We just don't encounter it. It lives way too deep.
Yeah, I mean, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I mean, you've got the concept of possibility. Oh, sorry. Deep Rising. Little tiny Amoebia thing down there in the water just sort of floats up, and it's like, okay, it becomes a giant monster because it expands.
Right.
Actually, the very last story that I wrote for this anthology for my part, called Bite-Sized, kind of came from that idea, and it was supposed to be a flash fiction piece, but it ended up being longer. But I took true events, so it took a little bit of research, and you get these little things that pop up out from the crust of the earth underwater after the big earthquake that hit in the 1860s out there in California, that in my story the little crustaceans and stuff are a bit hyper and possibly on steroids, but
possibly.
But everybody needs to have a good eating alive story in there somewhere.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean,
no doubt.
Oh, wait. Were there any cannibal stories in this anthology? Because they always make me laugh.
I didn't have any that were, well, I get yes and no. If you look at the true events that happened to the rescue boats after the Essex went down, which Moby Dick was based around, cannibalism did exist in that.
Yes.
So there is a hint of cannibalism in there, in that. But I did not go to the stereotype of just throwing them onto some island with a bunch of little cannibals.
Well, Dagon has a little bit.
True. There is a little bit there, but as far as a fully fledged story, like something like Solomon Kane from R.B. Howard, you know, where he's in Africa and he's dealing with, you know, some cannibalistic activities at times, I totally bypassed all that.
Okay. I'll let it go. No cannibal stories.
That'll be the next anthology. We'll have to do that in the next one.
But it also
fill your gut.
Did either of you read the last story in there called Turnipids?
I like the name. It grabbed me when I was looking through the TOC, but I didn't actually get around to reading it yet.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that.
It's not cannibalism, but it is something that some people are probably, once again, will say, I can't believe he wrote that. So I'm waiting for the backlash on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good backlash.
I'm gonna have to skip to the end and read that one next.
What I want you to try and do is to pronounce some of the names of some of the stuff that you've got in this list for some of the different cultural histories and stuff like that, especially the Welsh Gaelic stuff and some of the others.
Oh, Welsh.
Once again, yeah. Ian has sent me some material that was in Welsh, and it had a dictionary and glossary with it, and I tried, and it's just... it's just not, it's not my fort.
A little bit, not too much of the glottal thing in the back of the neck. It's like, ah, how do I say that? I don't know. Ah.
Exactly.
Some of it ends up sounding like Klingon, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
But here's the cool thing about Welsh. They're the only country that actually uses a dragon in their national flag. So, you know, that's awesome. Yep. They get bonus points right there.
The Welsh dragon. I have a silver pin that I have pinned on my leather jacket that I got years ago at a Celtic festival that has the Welsh dragon from the flag. So it's cool stuff.
Cool. Dragons are always cool, period.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I've got several dragon stories and dragon poems that I've written over the years. I was going to say the irony about Ian is the fact that he lived near Cardiff, which is, you know, where they do Doctor Who, and it's right there on the coast. And he shot a lot of photos of ships and marine life and things of that nature. And from growing up around it, I guess, and being around it all the time, he actually kind of despised it. He preferred going out into the hills and the mountains and shooting stuff out there. Right. So he's probably looking down on me now and cursing me like, how dare you use my stuff? And he'll probably try to force me to drink room temperature beer. So
wait, that's bad?
Well, he and I would have those discussions all the time. That was part of the deal, is he was supposed to wait around for me to get over to Wales so we could go bar hopping and, you know, try beers at room temperature versus frosty cold.
Ah, well, okay. Well, now, I drink Coca-Cola at room temperature, so.
Yeah, and I drink most of my drinks at that temperature as well, so I'm definitely not the average Texan in that regard, except for when it's extremely hot outside, then I will drink something from the fridge.
I will say this, though. Out of my Canadian beers I've tried, because I'm up to about 460 different beers I've tried over the years with all my traveling, and I believe it's out of Vancouver area, but I love Rickard's Red. That is a good beer.
That's a popular one, yeah. I was going to say, okay, you're going BC, it's either Kokanee or Rickard's Red.
Yeah, I like Rick. I don't know if I've tried Kokanee, but I like Rickard's a lot better than I like Labatt. Labatt.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a beer drinker at all, but I know some people are very particular about their choices.
Right. And the thing you have to understand is, like, English ales and British ales, a proper British ale is served at, like you say, it's close to room temperature, but they serve it at what's considered cellar temperature.
Yeah, exactly.
About
it's
65 degrees. And because English ale is meant to have, you know, all these different flavors and things that you don't get when it's served really cold. You know, those flavors don't come out until you get the drink between refrigerated temperature and you know, room temperature or what they call cellar temperature. So, yeah.
And the beer is not exactly supposed to stand around for a couple of years either.
Right.
I mean, your rums, yeah. Your whiskeys,
those
yeah.
Ales, they're made without preservatives. They're made to be a real ale in Britain is served straight from a cask. It's not. Yeah. It's not in a bottle. It's drawn from.
And
a
it
cask.
Was probably made just a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Hey, those Iron Maiden beers are in bottles.
I have one of those.
Well, yeah, the Trooper beer they do bottle because they want to be able to distribute it.
Yes.
It's hard to distribute casks to a lot of people, unfortunately.
Unless it's the cask of Amatadello.
There you go.
Haha, see a segue.
I like how you worked that in there. And we were talking about dragons earlier. One of Ethan's stories in there is called Dragons in the Mist. So
nice.
That's a good one to check out. That is one that I have read from the book.
I just happened to be on a random page, and it says there are 10 times more penguins on the mainland beach than there are out of us. What if they attack?
Well, there you go with turnip heads.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the Dragons in the Mist, that Essex story that I did, Battle of the Sea Titans, actually is based off of a Bob Eggleton piece of artwork.
Love
where
his
he
artwork.
Did a drawing of a dragon and Moby Dick battling. And as you saw probably in the intro, I stay in touch with Bob occasionally. We talk about everything from Godzilla to Kiss. And Bob put that painting up one day on his Facebook page and said, oh, man, I could really write a cool story about that, I think. He goes, well, go for it. And I did. And I got about halfway through the story, and I sent him first draft of what I'd written. And he liked it. Up to that point, he gave me some praise for it and said that, you know, he liked where I was going with it. And then I'm not sure what happened to him, but something with his health and we lost touch with each other for about a year or two there. And then whenever I came out with this book, I said, you know, I don't necessarily need his permission to do this this ekphrastic story based off of his art, but it would be nice to let him know in advance so he's not surprised and hear about it later.
Yeah, and he's on Facebook, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, right now he is?
Yeah, no, he's on and off all the time. He's fairly prolific now on Facebook.
Yeah, he's gotten better, but whatever's wrong with his health, and I contacted him. I said, hey, you know, do you remember this story? He goes, yeah. He goes, I can't remember it. And I said, well, here's what I'm doing with it. Do you mind? And he's like, no, go for it. And I sent him a copy of it. And then here, when I got the ebook version done, I sent him electronic version of it, and he thanked me for that. I don't know if he's had a chance to read over any of it or not, because he, of course, stays quite busy doing commission work as well as the book covers for all those really nice fantasy and horror books that he does. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was based off of a really cool piece, and it would have been nice to use that painting of Bob's, but I didn't have the budget for it, unfortunately. So my advice is, you know, look at my book and see what's in there. But then also go look at Bob Eggleton, and I mentioned in the introduction what the name of his painting was, and go look it up. And if you're not familiar with Bob Eggleton, you are missing out.
Absolutely, right. Especially if you like Godzilla or 150 other monsters that he's drawn stuff of.
Not to mention the Brian Lumley stuff like Necroscope.
That as well.
Oh, I didn't realize he did that. That's cool.
Yeah, he's an artist for those covers.
I haven't read a lot of Lumley's work. I've read some of it, but I have a good friend who's a big Lumley fan. He's probably read all of his books.
Yeah.
Well, Bob's done a lot of cover arts for a lot of different kinds of books that range in just the straight sci-fi. Because some of his space stuff, just like the Saturn in the background, the landing ship on the moon, it's like he's got great shit. He does a good depth and emotion in the pictures he draws.
Oh, he does. And I've still got even a T-shirt that's over – it's probably about 30 years old. That was from the science fiction book club that I bought that has a dragon wrapped around a rocket in space that he did. And I still have that shirt. It's still in great shape. And, you know, but I've been a fan of Eggleton's almost since the beginning of his career, whenever he first started becoming known, which is probably like 36 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, there was a series of magazines that came out, and I think in the 80s, which is where I believe I got hooked on his artwork. It's called Future. So a lot of it, they'd always have an art spread in the middle, and they'd change from straight science fiction to fantasy and mix stuff and whatever. And it's like, I love all that shit. So I used to pull those out and actually put them up on the wall.
Yeah, well, I love a Moby Dick and the true story of the Essex, and then seeing Bob's work. That's what inspired that story in there. So, you know, I definitely have Bob to thank for that inspiration.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, no doubt. And speaking of inspiration,
that was going to be my next set of questions.
Okay. Okay. Well, I just wanted to throw one thing out there, because the poem I wrote, Doom of Destiny, we were talking about John Manning earlier, who passed away in 2015. And I actually wrote that poem because of hearing about John's terminal illness before he died, and knowing that he was, it seemed, inevitably going to die soon, which unfortunately he did. So that poem was really inspired by, you know, the fact that I was going to lose a really good friend of mine, and, you know, just the loss of other friends and family that you tend to have over the years when you start to become middle-aged like myself.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. So it's a very heartfelt poem, and it means a lot to me. And every time I read it at events, I get a little choked up because I think of John. But I think it's a kind of a good way to memorialize him, as well as just the message in there is good, I think. So
that's cool. I didn't know that either, that you written it, you know, kind of based on that. And I didn't know John as well as Larry did. I'd only met John and seen him maybe two or three other times at conventions, and then chatted back and forth with him whenever I had submitted my story that got in Terror by Gaslight. But John, every time I was around John was always a very, very friendly, funny, and very professional guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's definitely missed by a lot of people. And
yeah, one of my biggest regrets is I never got to come down to any one of those conventions down that way. It's like, well, you know, I'm a little far away, but I really wanted to go.
Oh, I know. It's hard. I mean, Toronto to Chattanooga, even, you know, where
it's a wee bit of a stretch.
Italian office together. It's a long trip. It's, yeah. You know, it's a long trip from Texas, but it's even longer from Canada.
So, yeah.
I miss going to Canada.
Canada's awesome.
I love Canada.
I live here. So do I.
Especially, I mean, I haven't been all over Canada, but I once again have been up in your area once, and I have been to Niagara Falls area a couple of times, but Vancouver I've been to 5 or 6 times, and I loved Vancouver.
Did you ever get outside of Vancouver or just Vancouver itself?
No, I got to some of the surrounding areas during that time for various shoots. So I wasn't always in the city. I get to see some of the mountains and the beaches and the rolling fields. And I had a couple of invites for Edmonton and for Saskatchewan, and then those shoots never came through, unfortunately.
Well, those cities are a little on the less glamorous and less exciting, because they're like basically on a flatland plain, and it's like there's the city, and there's a highway that comes into it, and there's a highway that goes out of it.
Well,
pretty
I was,
much.
I was being courted for doing a multi-part documentary on First Americans up there. And
right.
I said, you know, well, on what in particular? They're like, well, First Americans. I'm like, that's a very, very broad.
Very broad.
You know, are you looking at a specific tribe or specific era and so on and so forth? And then it just never came to fruition because they never could, you know, nail it down. It's like, it's not that I'm against doing it. I'd love to do it. But, you know, what you're talking about is a 10-year TV series.
Yeah. There's like about 150 different nations just in the Canadian side of things, and I think there's about another 150 when you get down to the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that was my purpose, though, for possibly heading that direction, and it just, once again, never happened.
Well, if you ever get to go up to Jasper or Banff, beautiful areas. They're like in the mountains, and then the mountains just keep going up.
Yep. Banff, I've looked into Banff. I've had plans to go, and then for one reason or another, it just never happens.
Banff is a town set in the middle of a provincial park where they have a control on the number of people that are allowed to live there. It is not allowed to have, I don't know, I think it's 4,000 people are allowed to live in the entire town. That's it. But millions, well, before COVID, millions of people would blow through that town and stay there for a little bit, wander for a little bit, and then go on their separate ways and marry again. But the area is beautiful, and it's It's a lovely place. I've driven there a couple times.
Cool. Yeah,
and that's 3,000 miles from me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a big country, Canada.
Yes. It's actually bigger than the U.S.
I've never
by
been
square
up there.
Footage.
I want to go up there one of these days. I've always wanted to. I'll have to make that trip sometime.
Don't come up here right now.
No, no, of course not. I'm not going anywhere right now. I'd barely even leave my house. Are you kidding me?
Okay. Well, I was talking more about winter. Winter just started.
The first time I ever saw Niagara Falls was in the evening in February. Oh, my gosh.
Nice.
Every
Very
time I
bright.
Inhale, my nose hairs froze.
Yeah. And if you want to think about it, if you get out to Winnipeg, which I call Winterpeg, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, every time I've been there, it snowed on me when I'm there. And I've been there in June.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Okay, it was a freak snowstorm when I was there. I was like, what the hell? Winnipeg hates me. It snows on me. But they will get down to minus 50 degrees temperatures. Because it's in the middle of a plain. Wow. A lot
that's
of
really
air.
Cool.
And that's really the cool. opposite of what you get down in Texas, where it's all... What the hell is with that heat?
Right. Yeah, it gets very hot here. We've had some summers where it actually got up to 115 degrees.
Yeah.
And that's not including the humidity factor, which could push it up into the 120s or higher, because we get humidity here too. So it's summers can be pretty rough here.
Yes. Like we were talking beforehand, I've been to El Paso for 2 weeks and I was so happy that I was working at night and I didn't realize it was going to be that bloody hot,
right.
But I got paid well to be there. So I didn't care.
Yeah. It gets into the hundreds regularly in the summer here. So it can be rough, but the trade-off is, you know, we have short, mild winters. It does get cold here. We will get below freezing temperature and very occasionally we do actually get snow. Doesn't happen that often.
Maybe they get ice and you get a lot of these Yankees who from like New York who don't drive and then they get down there and they try to drive on ice at 70 miles an
right.
hour and slam on their brakes.
Yeah, we get ice storms or we get very light snow that then turns into ice and freezes the roads and shuts the entire Metroplex down so that
yes.
nobody can go anywhere.
All these people in their SUVs who don't know how to drive them.
Right.
And motorcycles and bicycles.
Yeah.
And I've seen videos like all kinds of things and it's like, the 1 year Georgia, they shut the entire state down because it had an inch of snow and I had to laugh because our snowstorm, the first one we got there a couple days ago, was the equivalent of 6 inches of snow. It's like, that would have killed them. But again, it's because you don't have the snow removal equipment and you don't have the salt trucks treating the roads or whatever. It's like, that's understandable.
Yeah, it definitely puts everything in gridlock down there whenever that happens.
Yeah, everybody just should stay home and sleep.
Yeah, fortunately for me, I was born and raised in a lot of the what we call mountains here. It's the highest ranges in between the Rockies and the Appalachians. It's not that high, but still, we get, you know, our fair share, well, at least we used to until recently with all this climate change. But, you know, I grew up learning how to drive in snow and ice, so... Getting down there, it wasn't that big of a deal for me. You just had to be on your defensive driving side to watch out for the other idiots.
Just got to be careful. That's
yep.
it.
That's it. That's it.
So, one quick last thing. Social media, marketing. How do you get your name out there to sell your stuff?
Book-wise, it's natewords.com, NAHTEWORDS.com. But you can find me on Facebook at Ethan Nate Creative, or you can find this book in particular is currently available through Amazon and through Kobo. I am trying to get it through Apple iBooks, where I've got some of my other work, but for some reason I'm having issues with Apple at the moment, so I don't know, but hopefully before too long.
A lot of people having issues with Apple.
Yeah. But that's mainly where you can find me. And on Twitter, it's at Ethan Nott, NAHT, and the number one.
And what about Instagram?
Nottepix, NAHTEPIX.
See, and I know that because I found you on Instagram and I said, hey, there you go.
There I go. I was adverse to doing all of that for the longest time, but at the moment with some of the job hunting I've been doing, some of these jobs are actually like wanting to be able to track you down to see what all you do in your spare time. And so they want to know your LinkedIn account and your Twitter account and your Instagram account. I was like, well, crap, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, sign up for this stuff. So I finally relented and did it.
Did you get an Etsy account?
That was a joke. I don't remember if I have one or not. I may.
That was a joke.
But, and I do have a nateword.wordpress.com account that I've been trying to get back up and running. So, because I had to split my accounts, my Square stuff that I had going through Naughty Word, something happened. I downloaded a third party thing that they asked me to download. I mean, it was through their system, and I did, and it just sent my entire website haywire. So for like 9 months, I couldn't even get into my website, and I just finally had to ditch it and start over.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, as much as I work with technology, there are days that I'm okay with going back to smoke signals.
Well, I can relate to that because a little while ago, I have a game that I play for religiously. Well, I've always played. This is pretty much the only game I play. I was like, oh, I'm logging in, auto-downloading an update. I didn't really want that, but okay, go ahead. Fine, an hour goes on, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I want to play. Nope, doesn't work.
Right.
It's because the update was to go up to another level in the OS, and I haven't jumped up into the other OS since, like, damn you!
Yeah.
So, Larry, what about you?
Well, I've got a blog. I haven't done much on it in quite a while, but it's you can find me at Larry Atchley, JR for Junior, .wordpress.com. So you can find me on that. And then on Facebook, you know, just under my name on Facebook, Larry Atchley Jr. That's pretty much the only areas I really do stuff. I don't do Instagram. I haven't really done any other platforms. Maybe in the future, who knows? But
I see, according to Goodreads, you're currently reading the history of Britain in 50 events.
Oh yeah, I do have a Goodreads account, and I've been trying to like update my library and keep track of anytime I get new books to put them on there so I can keep track of the books I have so I don't get duplicates.
I can't do that. I got too many.
I have thousands of books, and I'll probably never get around to actually putting down my entire library, but I keep telling myself I'll try to do that. But yeah, you can find me on Goodreads. I have an author account on Amazon. You can find my author account on Amazon.
And Facebook.
And list my works there, as well as on my blog. I've got my list of works on my blog, too.
Yeah, I occasionally Facebook. Blog on Goodreads, and it goes and transfers over to my Amazon account as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, because all the Amazon and Goodreads stuff is all connected. Because
they own everything.
No,
yeah.
They only own part of it. They're trying to get all of it.
Yeah, Walmart owns the other half.
Yes.
Yeah, or Google.
What's his face? Elon Musk is now catching up on all of them because he's now number two.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for personal wealth for, I think it's America, North America, Elon Musk just became the number two.
He's the, who owns Amazon, right? Elon Musk.
Jeff Bezos owns
that's
Amazon.
Jeff Bezos.
Elon Musk is the Tesla and SpaceX guy.
Tesla, okay.
Yeah.
All right. See, I was thinking he owned.
He needs me to write a space story for him. He needs to send me up in a rocket.
Space pirates!
Exactly. Yes.
Not to be confused with Space Pants, which was what's his face on the
Peter Dinkle.
Saturday Night Live. That one.
Yep, that is hilarious. Gwen Stefani.
Totally hilarious.
It is.
And it's like, wait a sec, he's actually singing that, and that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage is pretty cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've enjoyed his work in movies over the years.
And Pixels. He was in Pixels.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He was in Pixels.
Oh my God! Every time I think of Pixels, it's like he played a bad person, but it was a terrible movie. But it wasn't still funny.
It was a fun movie.
Was Peter Dinklage in Time Bandits? He was in Time Bandits too, right?
I don't think so.
No.
I could be wrong.
God, I haven't seen Time Bandits in so many years. I couldn't remember without looking on IMDb.
I bought the DVD a couple of years ago and watched it, but I haven't seen it in a while.
Well, I know he was in one of the X-Men movies.
Okay.
And it wasn't one of the good X-Men movies. I'm just saying.
And I think he was also an elf with Will Ferrell. Was that Peter Dinklage? I think it was Peter
Dinklage. Well, he's in Elf, yes. He's the writer who attacks Will Ferrell for calling him one of Santa's helpers.
Yes. Yeah, that was brilliant. That was a brilliant performance. He should have gotten some sort of award for that. I don't think he did, but he should have.
Oh. And so there was a really good movie he was in, Knights of Badassdom.
Yes.
If you haven't watched that movie, Larry, you should like that. There's pirates in that.
Yeah, he smokes a little weed, and he can see in the other realms.
Yeah, something like that.
Sounds fun. What's it called?
Knights of Badassdom.
Okay, I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah,
and no, he was never in Time Bandits.
No,
it's him
okay.
And it's Stephen Zahn.
Yes.
Oh, Stephen. Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I mean, it's very tongue in cheek, but it's a LARPing group, and things go wrong.
Oh, nice. LARPing. Nice. Okay. Cool.
Oh, and Summer Glau is in it as well.
Oh, yes. Nice. From Firefly and Serenity.
Yeah, that's why I keep remembering that one.
For one of my magazines I wrote for, I interviewed Summer the weekend that the Serenity movie came out, and she was so awesome. She was very, very nice. Gorgeous in person, and just wonderful to interview.
She's from Texas too.
Yes, San Antonio.
From San Antonio, the Hill Country area. Yeah.
Hills. They have eyes, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yes.
Wait a second.
Sure there's a movie called "The Hills Have Thighs."
Don't go there. Every single big name movie you've ever heard has a triple X version. There's even a Harry Potter. Actually, there's several Harry Potter ones.
What's that called? Rule 32 or something like that?
Right.
Yes. Something like that. And on that merry note, it is now time to wrap up this episode because we've gone over a little bit. But that's okay. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. It's bonus.
That's, like I said, going to be in 2 hours from now.
Right. Set your clock.
So, Larry, Ethan, thanks for coming out and being a part of the show.
Cool. Well, thanks for having us. Zombie Zach, otherwise known as Bill.
That's me.
To some people.
I'm known by many names.
Well, I definitely appreciate you taking time to talk to us about the book and everything else from hockey to snow.
And you guys got to learn about how to use Skype again.
Exactly.
Right. I know. We're Skype 2.0 users officially, yes.
I think this is Skype 3.0 now.
Yeah,
it's gone through some many changes over the last few years.
And thanks to everybody for listening today, too, and for commenting in the chat room. Go check out the book, Island Terrors and Sea Horrors. You can go find it on Amazon and Kobo. And
Kobo!
Some good stuff on there. It's worth a good read, so check it out.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Yes.
Everybody out there in your After Rotten Land, you have yourselves an amazing good time. Be well, be happy, be safe. Do all of those fun things that are supposed to be good for everybody as well as the environment, as well as my pocketbook. Have fun. Come back every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, maybe less standard because I think that's going to go away, but it'll still be Eastern Time. We're still good with it. And somebody was throwing something there. What was it? What? Go ahead.
I think it was Larry. I'll throw in this little bit, though, since you said for the environment, here's the real horror. Keep your plastics and your chemicals out of the waters.
Yes.
Yes. Do that. Do that and social distance, and please wear a mask if you do have to go somewhere.
No kissing.
And wash your hands frequently.
And do that, yes. Absolutely.
And don't cough on people, because if you cough on me, I will punch you.
Yep.
There and I mean it.
This has been a official Zombies Act After Rot public service announcement.
I actually have one of those.
Nice.
But it involves squirrels.
Oh.
That's just nuts.
I get distracted by those.
That's just nuck and futz.
That's right.
And now, to get back on tempo, have fun.